we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Mirror, read by Neil Sleet.
Elton John has quit touring after one last round-the-world tour. The rocker announced his plans to quit the road at a press conference in New York, where he hit back at reports that he was retiring because of his death.
Thanks to Marcus in London for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Lucy Porter. And opposite them, on my left, Vicky Pepperdine and Hugo Rifkin. Jeremy, who might be facing the Beijing of the end?
Oh, Theresa May. She arrived in China and she made a speech. She opened with a great zinger of a line, actually. She said, "It might be winter here, but I've received the warmest of welcomes," which was just great. It just put everyone at their ease because people were a bit nervous and thinking she might mention, you know, the disappeared or something like that. So that was great to do a joke about winter, because she's got a team of writers who are incredibly sensitive to the turn of the seasons. And if it had been the autumn, she'd have said, "Let's hope the set doesn't fall down." And if it had been the summer, she'd have said, "Well, there'll be no holiday from human rights violations." If it had been the spring, she'd have said, "Well, the evenings might be drawing out, but not as much as the agonising disintegration of all my hopes and dreams." But she had a winter gag. She wasn't specific. She didn't do a January. She didn't say it might be Veganuary, but I'll be grateful to swallow whatever scraps these tyrants throw me. But she was challenged on her leadership, and she said, "I am not a quitter," which was a phrase famously used by Peter Mandelson, who shortly afterwards quit being MP for Hartlepool to become a European Commissioner, so that never again would he have to speak to poor people. But you can't really say "I'm not a quitter," because it's not really up to her. You know, she will be dragged kicking and screaming from power at some point. It's not normally up to you whether you quit, really. I mean, I'm sure Charles I at some point said, "I'm going to keep my head in this situation." It ultimately won't be up to her. And various Tory MPs have been saying mean things. And one, Robert Halfon, said what we needed in policy making was a lion rather than a tortoise. And she was confronted with this. And she said, "I'm not going to try and compare myself with any animal, bird or car." What are you talking about, you weirdo?
Yeah, what a Mondeo.
Yeah, didn't she say that she needs to communicate better with her party and the public? Which I think is, if you're Prime Minister, sort of two quite key sort of areas you need to be excelling in, really.
And she's I can talk to my husband.
Yeah, or herself, I suppose, you know, which, I mean, I've started to do, to be quite fair. Mm. I was in the supermarket the other day and I accidentally said, "Right, anusol," out loud. Genuinely. And then I said, "God, I must stop talking to myself," out loud. And then I said, "Yes, it's you I'm talking to."
The big thing she seems to have achieved is that they're going to start buying British beef again, they said, because China stopped buying British beef, 25 years ago with the BSE scandal. But they've basically been studying Britain for the past 25 years and they've said there's no sign that the British public have gone collectively mad. They're just openly mocking us.
I like the fact she gave President Xi a DVD of The Blue Planet 2. It's just such a random kind of... It's like, you know, he's your difficult auntie. It's like, "Oh, I can't do Debenhams vouchers again."
No, it has that slight whiff of sort of almost getting in the... We haven't got them anything. What's near the door kind of thing? What have I, you know, only just done
right? Get it offline anyway, can't
you? Yeah, I was going to say, it's online. Oh, no, but they're not online. Can you get it online?
Oh, it's gone off the iPlayer now. Yeah, oh, that's a good present then.
Yeah.
This is Theresa May's trade visit to China, the perfect holiday destination for the Prime Minister, given that she requested somewhere warm, sunny, and where anyone who criticises the leadership is squashed like the bugs they are. Mrs. May presented President Xi with a box set of the BBC's Blue Planet, introducing the Chinese to many fascinating creatures of the deep that they can then catch and test cosmetics on. May also conveyed a personal message from Sir David Attenborough, which read, "The 90-year mission is nearly complete. All hail the Eternal Chairman." May spoke to President Xi about her environmental concerns, but he pointed out that the poisonous atmosphere that surrounds her is largely her own fault. Early this week, one senior Conservative MP likened May to a tortoise, not, as was reported, due to her slow and lacklustre leadership, but because she loves to sleep in a straw-filled cardboard box in the airing cupboard and is terrified of lawnmowers. 2 points to Jeremy. Lucy, which leak says the forecast is bleak?
OK, yes. So, there was a report prepared for Dexiu, which is the government department that sounds like a sneeze, which modelled all the different outcomes of Brexit. Hard Brexit, soft Brexit, and little baby bears, just right Brexit. And they, all of these models found that the UK would take an economic hit of between 2 and 8%. In any scenario, there would be economic damage. It got leaked to BuzzFeed, and Brexit Minister Steve Baker said that the report was unfinished, and anyway, these kinds of reports were always wrong, to which the civil servants were like, we're right here, we can hear you. So now he's in terrible trouble. I get very confused. So apparently someone from the Centre for European Reform suggested that the civil servants have been trying to rig the results of the Brexit impact assessments, which then Steve Baker repeated. So that upset the Civil Servants Union, which is the FDA, and then Ian Duncan Smith. Basically, the CER upset the FDA, but IDS thinks the CER is A-OK and wants to say TTFN to the EU ASAP.
So... Is that your initial response? The government... I like the way the government said it didn't address their preferred model, which is the one where they wake up and it's all been a terrible dream. And the Conservative Party is reunited because a load of small ships gather and sail to Dunkirk and collect £350 million a week off the beach.
They said as well, they said, oh, we can't release it because it will compromise our negotiating position. And anyway, it's rubbish. You don't want to see it anyway. And then they said, right, well, OK, we'll let Hillary Benn can see it, but only in a locked room, which is up the top of a mountain. He's got to find it. There's a quest involved.
I mean, I found myself rather bizarrely thinking, oh, well, you know, 2%, 4%, 8%, that's not so bad. That's not as bad as I thought. And I thought, no, hang on, that is still bad.
It's like the cats on the roof thing, isn't it? If they prepare us for 8%, you know, looking at me like...
The cats on the roof.
No, you prepare someone for the worst and then...
So
no,
you tell someone the cat's on the roof, but what's actually
happened? No, it's the
happened?
Thing of when someone goes
it's actually
on holiday...
In the, oven. The strangest thing about this is, you might remember last year we had this. There was this big fuss about the impact assessments. Remember that? When David Davis was asked in Parliament about impact assessments, and he said, yes, we've prepared them in excruciating detail. And Parliament said, can we see them? And he said, no, no, no. And Parliament said, please. And he said, no. And Parliament said, well, we've done a vote and you had to. And he said, oh, OK, then they don't exist. And Parliament said, what? And he said, sorry. And, you know, that was that. And then basically this happened. Last week, these impact assessments come out. And because I work in a manner vaguely connected to politics, people have said to me, how come these assessments of impact are not considered to be impact assessments, and can you explain that? And I've thought very carefully, and my answer has been no.
This is the leaking of a Brexit forecast prepared for the government, which indicated that the UK economy will grow more slowly after we leave Europe. The government initially refused to release the forecast, claiming that it wasn't signed off or finished, and wouldn't be complete until they'd added the words, and then they all lived happily ever after. Brexit Minister Steve Baker attacked the forecast in the Commons with a display of threatening menace rarely seen outside of an episode of Danny Dyer's Brexiteest Men. Of course, it can be confusing keeping track of all the different types of Brexit, but the most commonly discussed scenarios are soft, hard, semi-soft, semi-hard, blue, cottage, and, of course, the Norwegian option, which this week is Jarlsberg. 2 points. Vicky, who wants to unify his union?
Well, yes. OK, so this is season two of The Donald, 1 year on. This is the State of the Union address. Look at the state of it. President Trump, of course, speaking, hailed as his most presidential speech yet. Apparently it was a very long speech. I tried to watch it, but then I think I contracted the norovirus. I just couldn't stop vomiting. But appara- apparently, I'm told, the people that were able to sit through it, he apparently clapped himself, and he made a false statement allegedly every 4.5 minutes, which I thought was quite good, actually, for him. And he's claimed it was the biggest ever audience for a speech, 45 million. That claim obviously has been disputed by people who compile the figures, but they are haters and sad. So yeah, it's his State of the Union speech.
And I couldn't see Piers Morgan anywhere, but I suppose there was a lectern covering the bottom half of Trump's body.
It was quite show busy. You could sort of see the showmanship coming out because he had the North Korean defector waving his crutches around. And the policeman who'd adopted an opiate addict's baby. It was sort of like Noel's Christmas presents.
Everything is always the most, isn't it? Because he said this is the biggest audience, even though he was beaten by every other president that they've ever done the numbers. He always says that I'm the least racist person you'll ever meet. And I think, I'm not saying you're the most racist, Donald, but you're probably not the least. I mean, I'm not the least racist person I've ever met, and I'm not a racist.
The most interesting thing about the whole business was because the Democrats respond right to the speech, because you know he's the Republican president, so the Democrats respond.
Yeah, it's got a sort of Burns and supper vibe to it, hasn't it? Yeah.
Sort of. Buses, that's one of those no sort ofs, by the way. but the Democrat responding, it was Joe Kennedy, who is he's the grandson of, I think, Bobby Kennedy, and he's supposed to be the big hope of the US establishment coming up. But the most interesting thing about him is that he's a twin. There's two of them. And you can just tell with the way American politics is going, it's like, the other one's going to be an evil twin.
People say he doesn't really want to be president and he's not enjoying it, but I think he is. I mean, Theresa May, you know, she knows she made a mistake. You can see, you know, she just pauses and her face just goes into a rictus and you hear this tiny voice going, "Help me!" But Trump, I think he's actually having a good time.
I think he's loving it. I mean, he did the whole speech and he's got this special squeaky voice he does when he's trying really hard not to be evil. And he did the whole speech in his special squeaky voice, trying to say nice things. It was a bit weird, because he did sort of, you know, talk about what they're meant to do in that kind of speech is, you know, it's the state of the nation. And he didn't mention any kind of Russia stuff at
all. He mentioned Russia once.
Just in passing, as like a list of countries.
Yeah. Mm. And when he mentioned it, he winked to his KGB handler.
Piers Morgan, of course, when he interviewed him, also didn't mention Russia. But it's quite hard to say the word Russia if you've got the bridge of your nose rammed into someone's coccyx.
This was Donald Trump's State of the Union address. The speech was an opportunity for Trump to look back at his many achievements in much the same way people do when they're brought to a tribunal at The Hague. The president called for unity, which I think we'd already guessed would turn out to be his favourite Mitford sister. Some commentators thought that Trump appeared a little more subdued than usual and therefore more statesmanlike. But then, a baked Alaska looks more like Winston Churchill if you put a bow tie on it. Everything is relative. 2 points to Vicky. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Lucy have 5, and so too do Vicky and Hugo. Hugo, what's on the agenda at the BBC?
OK, so this is probably the week's big story about the BBC, because there's nothing the BBC likes more than talking about the BBC on the BBC. And in fact, when someone on the BBC gets to beat up the BBC on the BBC, then that is the BBC at its most BBC. but this is about income inequality, a story that more or less sort of kicked off in January when Carrie Gracie, formerly the China editor, resigned, and she resigned because as an international editor she wasn't being as paid as much as her male peers. And there was a report by PwC into pay inequality at the BBC, which said there'd been no evidence of gender bias at the BBC, it was just that the men were really super.
Should we just do a quick poll across how much we're all being paid for this evening?
Yeah.
I'm here, I've paid to come in.
And I've paid for you to be here.
Thank you.
I think Tony Hall has come out of this really badly, because rather, who's the Director General, the gaffer, rather than say, all right, you know, yeah, hands up, we've really badly treated Carrie Gracie, he kind of tried to say, he said, this is in no way a reflection on the professionalism or skills of Carrie Gracie, but he said that foreign editors shouldn't get the same money because there's differences in in scope and scale, he said. Cause so presumably suggesting that the China job, I mean, you know, China. I mean, you know, once you've seen Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2, you're pretty much... pretty much got the hang of it then, haven't you? Whereas America, I mean, you know, like, all right, in China it's a different language, but in America they say sidewalk. You could be confused for months not knowing, not knowing which bit of the ground to stand on, couldn't you?
They have completely handled this so badly, and it takes an internal... Another bloody internal review. The BBC love nothing more than an internal review.
It's, who doesn't?
Oh, maybe...
The BBC actually, is old, isn't it? It's nearly 100 years old. It's going to expect fingers up its jacksie every so often.
Well, we're going to have an internal inquiry. We'll do about it. I mean, this thing seems to be a case where the numbers clearly don't add up, and the report says, well, it's not that the numbers don't add up, it's just it looks like they don't add up, and consequently we understand as a result of that why it might look like the numbers are different. They are different numbers. The main thing is that we all sort of get along, isn't it? And why nobody needs to resign or be sacked, because there's nothing wrong essentially. The BBC is the first to put its hands up, but it's not going to put its hands up.
You've got an equal pay issue here. Why didn't you get a union or an employment tribunal? They've got an accountancy firm. The reason I hire an accountant is because if I didn't have one, I would be in prison. And if you look up PricewaterhouseCoopers, go to their Wikipedia page, all I'm saying is, once you get to the controversies section, you're in for a very, very long
read.
Oh, yeah,
they're like South Yorkshire Police. I mean, yeah. This is the BBC's Gender Pay Row, which escalated this week with China editor Carrie Gracie and Director General Tony Hall being interviewed by a House of Commons select committee. If you were troubled at all by this issue, don't worry, we have got our best white men on the case. The House of Commons select committee and BBC senior management looked into gender equality and concluded that it is a thing. And they would both love to know more about it. Just a couple of sides of A4, no need to go mad. When I worry about gender equality, I try and reassure myself with the thought that when the BBC is eventually reduced to two people sitting in a shed in Peterborough, one of those people will still be Sue Barker. 2 points. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Rats in my room. Every day I've got more rats in my room. Guess I'd better get some cats in my room, so they can handle all those rats in my room.
Oh, Kate Jeremy. Bush, 2 points.
Yeah. Lovely. Lovely. Nothing's better than the music you listen to when you're a teenager, is it? Stick it on shuffle, always comes up. Jeremy, who's moving house?
MPs and peers. MPs voted this week that they should decamp during the much-needed renovation of Parliament. I think they should just get out and turn it into a museum, because it is archaic. I mean, the whole sort of gothic, you know, faux medieval appeal, it just feeds the sort of entitlement and false sense of superiority of the people inside and inculcates newcomers into the establishment, which, of course, is its point. But it's a horrible building. It's so ugly in there that the photography is banned. That's how ugly it is. A police officer will come up to you, and the ones who are dressed as palace staff in sort of gold breeches and Elizabethan bear-baiting codpieces, who go around barking at tourists saying, "What part of no photography don't you understand? All of it, they're Japanese, you Burks." It's hideous in there. But the only good thing about the decor is it sort of reminds you of an old-fashioned curry house, because there's lots of flock wallpaper, which does remind you of a proper curry. You know when curry houses used to be proper curry houses? It's not like now where you get contemporary Indian cuisine with a gentrified twist. Mumbai street food, which is a single chickpea served on a paving slab. Bangladeshi run House of Lords inspired curry house with red furry wallpaper, gold paint and images of the Raj, like it used to be. They should get rid of it, but they've got all sorts of problems with it. It's absolutely infested with lobbyists. And the other day there was a robin in the chamber, although they do say that when the last robin finally leaves the Palace of Westminster, Jacob Rees-Mogg will develop self-awareness.
Isn't it? The whole point is that it's sort of really, really dangerous and at severe risk of floods and fires, and they're sort of really rushing the whole thing through, and they're going to move everyone out in 2025, yeah. Which seems, you know, quite a long run-in, really, if it's really that bad.
Laid back about it. And some of the plumbing and electric cabling has not been upgraded since the building was completed in 1870. Well, I mean, think that is. I mean, if my plug sockets hadn't been sort of sorted out since the end of the Franco-Prussian War, I mean, I would. I mean, you'd sprint from the building, wouldn't you?
If you say to the peers, we've got a terrible damp problem, they just say, welcome to my world.
They've had 60 fires in 10 years, they reckon.
60, nearly 60 fires. And you think, what is... I mean, what, when are these troublesome Catholics going to settle down? How did Lord Bates bring drama to the House of Lords this week?
Oh, he was late, and because he was late, he resigned.
Yeah.
And everyone said, that's really mad. And he said, no, I'm resigning. And then the government said, no, we don't accept your resignation because that's ludicrous. And so he sort of unresigned, I think.
Yeah. It was extraordinary. He stood up and said, sorry, I should have been here earlier. I wasn't. I apologise, that's not good enough. I resign.
I mean, that's just
walked out. It's almost as if someone before me said, you shouldn't be late, you should apologise. I will apologise. You make sure it's properly apologised. I want you to apologise. Right, watch this. This is the vote by the House of Commons to move out of the Palace of Westminster for 6 years to allow for essential repairs. The move won't actually happen until 2025, by which point our system of government will consist of survivors making important decisions through hand-to-hand combat on waste ground. Andrea Leadsom said that in the last 10 years there had been 60 incidents that could have led to a major fire, all of which were attempts by her fellow MPs to burn her at the stake. Reports show that there were 7 fires in the Houses of Parliament last year, 200 toilets failed last month, and a rabbit was spotted in one of the car parks. One might think that a rabbit wouldn't be cause for concern, but it's thought Theresa May had trained it to try to coax Jeremy Corbyn into the sewer system in search of Wonderland. 2 points to Wonderland. Hugo, who's in conversation with a cetacean?
Oh, right. So this is the story about the whale. There's a whale in, I think, France, and it's called Wiki, and the idea is that it's been taught to talk. It's supposed to be able to say hello and bye-bye and Amy, which is the name of the person training it, and there's a recording that anyone can listen to, and I did, and it's absolute rubbish. It's just your totally standard insane whale noises, and they're claiming that they can understand. It's like having a conversation with Chewbacca. It's just gibberish. It's nothing. But they insist, no, this whale is saying hello and goodbye and rubbish. But I think, I don't know, everyone says this is great for science and progress, but I think it's a really, really bad idea, because if we teach killer whales to speak English, then at some point killer whales are going to realise that they're called killer whales.
I mean, you can't just say, I don't understand it, therefore it's not language. I mean, that was a justification for empire. Are you using this country at all? Sorry, that's absolute nonsense. All right, shoot him and plant the flag. Plant the flag.
No, but it's not that... The point isn't that I happen not to understand it. The point is they're claiming it's speaking English.
Well, Hugo,
and it's bloody not.
It's just a mimicry. It's like when, you know, like you go around to your friend's house and they've got an 8-month-old baby and they say, look, she's saying asparagus. You're like, no, she is.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's the first of the animal kingdom to mimic human speech, but I must say I'd be quite miffed if I was that dog that had learnt to say, sausage. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
We do actually. We can play this excellent thing, which I think is going to.
Is this live?
It's not. We've got him on the phone now.
Hello, is that Wiki?
Can you hear me?
I can't talk for long. I'm on a French mobile network.
All right. No, we understand you. So we'll pay for the call. We're the
fair kind.
Can you play it for me?
Hello.
One, two, three.
Amy.
Hey, it was someone saying asparagus.
Yeah. Can we just clarify that the whale was the second voice we were hearing? Rubbish.
This is the story of Wiki, a killer whale who is believed to be the first of her kind to mimic human speech. Once again, it shows what amazing things the animal kingdom is capable of if you've got a cattle prod in your hand. She can say, hello, goodbye, Amy, and 1, 2, 3. Disappointing children who'd come to see her punch a ball with her nose and didn't want to hear her whole life story. Wiki lives in a French aquarium. Well, God knows what that's like, bearing in mind a French zoo is basically an abattoir with a cafe. She spoke the words while partially immersed in water with her blowhole exposed to the air, which coincidentally is the opening line of my soft porn novella, Lieutenant Hornblower and the Big Sexy Fish. I'm not that impressed. Come back to me when you've got a clam that can recite Shakespeare. 2 points to Hugo. And before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Vicky.
Yes, Mike Meredith in Cambridge received a letter from Reading University, who are looking for children to participate in a learning study. It advises, if you are not chosen to take part, you and your child's data will be destroyed. Seems a bit harsh. I'm sure they know what they're doing.
Lucy.
This was from the Bristol Post, and it was sent in by someone calling themselves Portway Plodder. A new dining experience is coming to Bristol that requires you to be completely naked. Organiser Will Bryson from Eastville told the Bristol Post that he hoped the nudist restaurant would be a semi-regular pop-up event.
Hugo.
This is from the BBC News site, and it's sent in by Jonathan Gibbs, and it's a headline, and it says, Boris Johnson's younger sister to enter Big Brother.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Lucy have 10, and so too do Vicky and Hugo. It's a tie. How moving. Before we leave you, here is a seminar on offer at the Royal Society of Medicine sent in by Dr. Chris Hiley.
Choice at the end of life. Last chance to book your place.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Lucy Porter, Vicky Pepperdine and Hugo Rifkin. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Clint Edwards, James Kettle and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Stephanie Lang and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.